It's Wednesday, February 8th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Austin, Texas. Well, good afternoon, evening, morning, whatever time it happens to be where you are listening to this podcast. I have just wrapped up the first day for me of the TCEA 2006 conference, which is the conference of the Texas Computer Education Association, held every year in February here in Austin, Texas. I had a great day, was able to hear some real motivational and passionate people talk about education, schools, and kids. I started off the morning listening to Coach Carter, that the movie Coach Carter with Samuel L. Jackson is based on, and boy, was he ever dynamic. I didn't podcast or record that, but posted some notes on that to my blog. And actually, this afternoon, gave a presentation that I'd like to share with you. And the topic of this presentation is Cultivating Digital Literacy Through Blogging and Podcasting. We actually started the session listening to a podcast from Willow Web, which comes from Willowdale Elementary School in Omaha, Nebraska. And we had the participants who were members of the CampSIG organization, which is the Campus Computer Education Facilitators, or the Campus Technologists here in Texas, brainstormed the digital literacy or 21st century literacy skills that it sounded like kids were developing and refining as a result of their participation in a podcast. We also listened to just part of an enhanced podcast, and actually watched the enhanced podcast that I had helped my daughter, Sarah, who's a five-year-old kindergartner, make a couple weeks ago about her science fair project that was research on hedgehogs. And so anyway, we kicked it off with those brainstorming activities and then got into the session. I was actually preceded by a representative of the Texas Education Agency who was discussing the technology application techs, or what is referred to in other parts of the world as the ICT skills that are required for students. And then we had a representative of EPALS talk, and it was actually Tim DeCipio, who's the chairman and co-founder of EPALS, and gosh, that really fit in well with the topics that we were talking about and discussing, which really was the constructive use of disruptive technologies to help students connect authentically to real people, to real issues, and to engage in the learning process with 21st century tools. So without further ado, here is the presentation, and I would welcome any feedback or comments that you might have either on the blog, which is Moving at the Speed of Creativity, www.speedofcreativity.org, or you can always visit my personal website, which is www.wesfryer.com, and you can go to the contact link to contact me via email or web form. We're going to spend the next 30 minutes or so talking about how we can cultivate digital literacy through blogging and podcasting. And I'm so excited that EPALS is the sponsor, because I think the type of curricular activities, the type of pedagogy, to use that big college word, that just means instructional strategies, that teachers use, this is exactly what we need to be doing in our schools. And by the way, if you want to copy down the address of my blog, it's speedofcreativity.org, and later tonight I'll have this presentation available as a podcast with all the links to all the resources and things that we talk about, so you don't have to jot those down. But EPALS is an example of what I think is a disruptive technology. I mean, typically in the classroom, we write for the audience of one, the teacher. And I admit, I was one of those students that was pretty motivated by that. You know, I wanted to get that A. But we know that all of our students aren't. And I would contend that blogging and podcasting are two other examples of technology use that can be used constructively in disruptive ways, because it's not about a transmission-based education. It is about engaging students in activities which they find intrinsically motivating, and which at the same time acquire all these 21st century literacy skills that we heard Karen talk about. So I want to start with four observations, and if any of you happen to be online,
I have a survey you can take, and I don't know if you've seen this website, tinyurl.com. I read the book A Whole New Mind by Dan Pink in the last few months. Great book. And he uses this to reference the websites that he wants to go to. You can take any web address, real long address, and just go to tinyurl.com, and it'll create a short one. So if you want to take my survey about blogging and podcasting, you can go there. And we may not look at the results right now, but if we wanted to, we could actually dynamically pull those up, because I'm using the program SurveyMonkey to just do a little survey for free. Let me start with four observations. These are my opinions, and you can feel free to disagree with me here. But the first one is that literacy is everybody's business. It is not just the English teacher's business. It is not just the language arts teacher. We are all literacy teachers. Because the definition of what it means to be literate in the 21st century ain't what it was yesterday. It's changed. And we all have got to be passionate about teaching literacy and encouraging our students to develop literacy skills. I had a fantastic presentation this week at Texas Tech University, where I'm a graduate student and I'm on staff, by a gentleman named David Johansson, who is a professor at Columbia or at the University of Missouri in Columbia, all about problem solving. And he made this comment. He said, every real world problem is multidisciplinary. Think about designing a building. Can you design a building today without looking at the economics of it? Without looking at the environmental impact of it? We have a new fountain at Texas Tech between the College of Education and the Philosophy Building, and I was talking to one of the deans, and he was telling me how they had to design that whole thing with skateboarders in mind. Because if they didn't, skateboarders would totally trash that entire beautiful fountain that they had created. So you couldn't just have engineering skills, and you couldn't just know the math. You had to know a lot of different skills. Third observation, and this fits right in with what we heard from Karen at TEA. The need for digital literacy skills cannot be an option, as it is considered by many people today, and you all know that more better than probably anyone else as campus technology support specialists. A joke, or merely what kids choose to do after school. I don't know about you, but I'm going to go see Mark Prinsky tomorrow morning at 8, and Prinsky talks a lot about we've got to engage these kids. And some people are saying these students are gaining these 21st century literacy skills despite us. Not saying they're spiting us, but despite what we are doing or not doing in our classrooms. Because the games that they're involved in, I mean, it's not Pac-Man, you know. It's a much more higher level of gaming environment. But we cannot relegate digital literacy development to something they go do as a special, you know, like they do art and music every once in a while, or they get to take that class optionally. We can't consider it to be optional. And my third contention is fitting right in with what we heard about with EPALS, is that we have got to emphasize the disruptive use of technology. I am not interested in sustaining technology. I am not interested in Microsoft Office and productivity. Do we need to know that? Yeah. But how long does it take you to teach someone to use a word processor? You know? Yes, we can use it in advanced ways, but I'm telling you, Excel and those kind of things, PowerPoint, doesn't excite me. What excites me are applications like what we're talking about today, students blogging and having comments by their relatives who may not even live in the same town that they live in, by people they don't even know who are in another state and think enough of their writing to leave a comment and get that student excited. Because if we do that effectively, we can fundamentally change perceptions about teaching and learning. And that's what it's really all about. So, here's my thesis. I am not going to encourage you today to change the system, because who can do that? None of us can, right? But what I am going to encourage you to do is to change the way you teach and the way you invite both students and teachers to engage in the curriculum. And I'm using that little delta. I took physics a long time ago, and that's what we always use for change. So that delta means change. We want to change the way we teach and the way we invite. So we're just going to talk about two things today. We're going to talk about 21st century literacy skills and high-stakes testing. I'm going to kind of go off on a little bit of an edge in making a contention that you didn't hear the TEA representative make. And secondly, look at blogging and podcasting and the role they play in literacy development, and why every single school that you work with really does need to set up a safe classroom blog. You could do that through the EPAL site. You can do that with Blogger. There's a lot of ways. Tools are free. Just takes teachers who are passionate and have this vision for how technology can be used to release this power. I've had an opportunity to visit with several of our campuses that are in the Technology Immersion Pilot Project. Every student and every teacher in these environments has a laptop. And we might think, wow, that's a dream. What do you think the kids have said they want to do more than anything else with their technology? And what do they do if their school lets them take it home? And if their school lets them have this software, what do you think they want to do? They want an instant message. Social discourse. You know, human beings have an innate desire to communicate. Yes, ma'am.
We're one of the 6-7 eighth grade. And what we found very interesting is immediately there were 3 websites created, and immediately the kids were working through their grief through IM. We did not think we would see that happening with our students, but it was amazing the grief process and working through that grief that the kids did, not face to face, although there was some of that, but a lot of it was through the internet.
That's a great story, and we should capture that story even as a podcast. I mean, we could do an interview and you could bring those kids. I mean, I could help you do that, or you all could do that on your own. Stories are powerful, and I'm telling you, somewhere else we need to center ourselves as educational technologists is in this whole idea of digital storytelling. Because podcasting can be about digital storytelling. Our brains are hardwired for storytelling. Okay, we've been gathering around campfires for years, listening to people tell stories about the hunt and about grandma so-and-so and whoever. We are hardwired for it, and we can use technology to leverage that. My contention is we need to leverage the constructive use of this. Okay, because we hear all these times people talking about MySpace and Zanga. Why are these kids out here doing this stuff? Well, how many schools are engaging kids in learning how to be digital citizens? Digital citizenship isn't part of the curriculum right now. Students need our help, and this should make us feel good. Now, if you believe, as many of our legislators, I think, and other people do, that school is all about transmitting content, okay, you are the vessel, and I am the pitcher, and I will pour myself, and I will pour my textbook into you, and then you will regurgitate it when I command, and we'll call that learning. If you believe that, well, you better be concerned about your future as a teacher, because I'm here to tell you, online instruction can take your place. But I'm not worried, because I don't believe that's what education is all about. Education is all about engaging the learner in something authentic that really connects to their experiences, that really challenges them, and a website cannot do that like a teacher can. I believe we all want to be engaged in work that matters. And there's a lot of kids across this country, there are a lot of teachers in this country who, if we were to ask them this question, when you go to work every day, are the assignments your teacher is giving you to do something that really matters, that makes a big difference in the world? I would contend a lot of students would probably answer that negatively. Now, as a teacher, I know that we do make differences. Okay, the connections that we make with kids every day can make a difference. But if we all want to be engaged in work that matters, then what are we doing in school? Let's have a reality check here, okay? And I know that I'm preaching to the crowd because you all know this. But what do most high-pressured, high-stakes testing-focused learning environments look, feel, sound, and taste like? I'll tell you what they taste like. They taste like, oh, we can't have the laptops yet until the tax test is over, even though the state's giving them to us, because we got to get ready for the test. And that is the reality that we have here in Texas, and I think it's the reality we have in a lot of other places. And the bottom line for education is where you want your kids to go, and I want my kids to go, where we want our grandkids to go. And I guarantee you, if we were to take a survey, and parents were to really know what that kind of environment is like, it's all about fear. And can anybody thrive in an environment where they're fearful all the time? Absolutely not. So let's talk about the alternative, digital literacy. All these pictures, by the way, are taken from the Flickr Creative Commons search page. And I'll include that in the podcast show notes for this presentation. Creative Commons, if you don't know, is a wonderful way for people to share content legally. Say, yeah, I took this picture. Please remix it. Use it in your presentation. Put it on your web page. Put it in your podcast, whatever you want to do. And so these are all attribution-only pictures, and I've got the website out there below. And so here's a picture of somebody's digital treasure trove, or I don't know what we would call it, but somebody's imprint. We've got a digital camera, we've got an iPod, we've got a phone, we've got all these different digital devices, we've got a laptop. Let me give you a disclaimer. We all look at the world through our own lens, right? And so my lens is inherently limited, just as yours is. However, I think we can still make some generalizations about education, specifically as they apply to digital literacy. That's what we're talking about today. If you consider this red circle to be high-stakes testing, we have a belief in this country today that there is an alignment between high-stakes testing environments and 21st century literacy skills. High-stakes testing, unfortunately, tends to be focused more on the lower level of Bloom's taxonomy, the knowledge and comprehension level, rather than the higher level thinking skills. Has anybody, by the way, taken the whole tax exit tests, all of them? I don't really want to do that, but I need to do that at some point to really get a feel for what are our kids having to do. I had to take the graduate record exam, the GRE, again a couple years ago. And I tell you, I walked out of that test saying, thank goodness my school is not just looking at this score, because there's so much more to West Fryer than what I could show on that test. Thank goodness they have a writing part, because I love to write. But anyway, it's high-stakes testing, okay? So that's that circle. Next circle, we'll get to a circle, but engage. 21st century literacy skills. What are they? Cheryl Lemke's engage framework is a nice way of thinking about this. We've got digital age literacy skills, inventive thinking, effective communication, high productivity. And what do you see surrounding all of those things? Academic achievement. So we have a belief that if we have a high-stakes testing environment, we can still have 21st century literacy skills. Well, guess what? 21st century literacy skills and a focus on those are very, very different than what we have in a high-stakes testing environment, and you know this. 21st century literacy skills are digital literacy. It involves a real world. It involves a lot of higher-order thinking skills. And so here is my question. How much overlap do we have? I would say most legislators, most school boards, most administrators, perhaps, and really it's business, okay? Who brought about tax and TOS and all that in Texas? Who was it? Yeah, and Perot and the whole business community, wasn't that a big part? I mean, that actually, I started teaching in Texas in 96, so that I was a little bit after it all started. But it all, I think they believe that we can get these two things at once. High, you know, testing, and 21st century literacy. Because when you ask them what they want, what do they say? I want students that can collaborate, students that can, synthesize information, they can get it off the web, they can work with the team, they're dependable, they got a work ethic, they think all these things fit together. Well, here's my contention today for you to consider. And I would welcome your feedback, by the way, because you can comment on my blog post for this podcast. I would love to hear what you thought about this and what your ideas are. I contend that today, in many schools where we have an environment of high-stakes testing, 21st century literacy skills are mutually exclusive from the kinds of skills that we're reinforcing with testing. This may not be true in the TIP campuses, on the one-to-one environments where the students have the laptops, but my perception so far, I'm writing my dissertation about how success is defined when it's one-to-one. What does the state think? What does the administrator think? What does the teacher think? What does the parent think? What does the student think? It appears that we're just trying to do regular education more effectively with technology, which is a transmission-based model. All right, so that's enough thinking about that stuff. We're not going to look at the survey results because we don't have time. So let's talk about blogging and podcasting. And we've already heard some examples of podcasts, and we're going to look at some examples of blogs, and then I'll get you out of here. My contention is that amassing and regurgitating information is not an impressive achievement in the 21st century. Now, was that impressive 20 years ago? Do any of you remember doing research in the library with the microfiche? Okay? You know? Woohoo! I found this article. It's an Eric article, and I found this. It was a big deal to get that information. But today, that is just not an achievement. However, when you look at science fair projects that some people will turn in, or other Times reports, you know, copying and pasting all this content, they think that we're supposed to be impressed by that as teachers. Learning to communicate is a very complex thing. It is very complex to learn how to write, to learn how to speak, to learn how to emote. It's complex. It's not simple. You can't do it with your class of fourth graders if you're just all writing how to make a hamburger. You know? That's not going to do it. Yet that's what we see happening a lot. So what do? Well, let's talk about blogging. What is blogging? Blogging is putting stuff on the web, but it's different in two basic ways. Number one, it's interactive, because it doesn't have to be a one-way conversation. And you can moderate that as a teacher, meaning you're not going to have a bunch of profanity up there because you get to see the comments first and say, oops, we're not letting Johnny say that to Susie. I'm going to delete that, and we're going to talk to him. You can make people log in, and you can, you know, ban users, and there's different ways to control it. But RSS is the other thing that makes it so powerful, and that's allowing people to subscribe to an individual's information feed, really, their podcast, their blog, whatever. I'm going to give you homework, and you didn't know this, but you've got homework because you chose to come to this session. And your homework is to go to Mark Alness's Mighty Writers website. It's just room12.com. You can remember that. You can write that down. It's in Seattle, Washington. It's at Arbor Heights Elementary School. And he's using a great tool that David Warlick, who's a North Carolina educator, offers for free for anybody who wants to, called Blogmeister. And his third grade students are blogging. And so here on the right side of the slide, you see about the blogger. Hi, my name is Danielle, and I love to write at room12.com. And I also love basketball, reading, drawing, and playing with all my friends. I am a dancing queen. I love dogs, too. Okay, so this is Danielle's self-disclosure. Privacy-wise, safety-wise, we don't have her picture. We don't have her email address. We don't have a way to reach out virtually and touch Danielle. So we've addressed a lot of the concerns and issues that reasonably administrators and parents have about this. Let me go back. Notice that this article that Danielle posted was on December the 27th, 2005. Now, I don't know about your school district, and I'm not sure about Seattle, but I'm pretty sure they're not in school on December 27th of any academic year. And how many people have read this? 125. As of this week, earlier this week, there was only one comment. I left another comment. And here's what Daniela wrote. The last gift. My vacation is going great. I've been having play dates with all my friends. For Christmas, I got a foosball table and a GameCube from Santa, but the foosball table was for my grandparents. I also celebrated Hanukkah, and I had it at my house this year. If I could give one last gift to someone, that person would be my neighbor, because she is one of the nicest people I know. The gift I would give her would be a scarf I made for her. I would like to give her a scarf that I made because it is nicer to make a present to someone than to buy a present. And she goes on. The cool thing about this is, Mark reads my blog, and I bet you he's going to show this to his students. And so she's going to know that a bunch of educators in Texas have read something that she wrote. And you can go comment on it. That's your homework. You don't have to go to Daniela's page, but your homework is to go to this website, read some of the work, and leave a positive, constructive comment that's going to help edify the blogger, the author that has published that. Here's the only comment that was there earlier this week. It says, I love that, Danielle. That is so sweet because it comes from the heart. Love, Aunt Vicky. So Vicky has read Daniela's post, and she has commented. Okay? Very cool. Now, might that have happened without technology? Sure, it might have. but probably not on the scale that it's happening today. Purpose and audience are so key. And that's what blogging and podcasting help address. Because students are no longer just writing for the teacher. Big whoop! Where does the paper go when it's done? In the circular, you know, bin. I mean, maybe we're going to put it on the fridge at home, but most kids are not very excited about that. But you talk about publishing for a global audience, recording their voice, and getting their message out there. I'm talking about excitement and motivation that we want to constructively use in the classroom to do what? To develop literacy, to help kids get ready for their future, not for our past. You need to know about Room 208. Bob Sprankle is a main educator. He teaches a combined class of third and fourth graders. His website is bobsprankle.com. Bob was one of the first guys to get into the whole blogging and podcasting thing, and he's had folks from all over the world, literally, comment on his students' work, listen to his podcast. Last year he had somebody from Sweden who with his son listened to the podcast and sent him an audio comment, and they included it. Our second grade classroom at Murphy Elementary in Lubbock, Texas, actually recorded their podcast on this same model that Room 208 has used, and the kids exchanged what's called a shout-out. You know, hey, Room 208, this is Mills Murphy Podcast in Lubbock, Texas. You know, back and forth. The thing that I love about Bob's use of this is that it's all about literacy. The kids are doing literature circles. They're talking about their books. They're asking each other questions. I mean, they're actually producing a show, a regular show, for a global audience. I've already shown you Radio Willow Web. This is, you know, we had Karen from TEA talking about best case studies or stories. I would love to tell you all about the Texas classrooms that are doing this stuff. But you know what? I don't know where they are. I don't know if there are teachers that are. There are. But I would give you a second homework assignment, and that is to communicate with me. Let me know when you create a podcast in your school, when you create a blog, when the students are doing this thing. Let me know. I will let other people know, and I will challenge other people to visit your blog and then engage in this feedback process. Yes, ma'am. For the podcast, you really just need a microphone. That's pretty much it. And you can even do it without a mic. I helped a graduate student who's teaching a class a couple weeks ago. It's called Audio Blogger. You can just use a cell phone. You just call it. It's a number in San Francisco. But you just call and boom, your podcast is right up there. Normally you want to edit it when students are doing it. You know, you don't. And so it's better to have a microphone. But there's free software and free tools. And if you want to email me, I'll be glad to. I'll include some of that in the show notes, but I can, you know, email you other links that will help you get started with a podcast.
We were talking about
that just affirms what I said, right? These kids want to communicate, but in schools, what do we do a lot of times? We ban instant messaging entirely. Even, and I don't know what it is on all 22 immersed campuses, but I know that some, it's ISS or LICS if you're instant messaging during the day on some campuses. Whoa, you know, that's because it's disruptive and we're not going to do that. Yes, ma'am.
What websites do you broadcast?
You basically need to have some kind of a way to post an RSS feed, and the easiest way is just to use Blogger. As a personal example, at our church, okay, our pastor's had his sermons posted to the web, but you have to click there on your computer and listen to it there. By actually saving the address of any audio file and then putting it inside a blog, you make that into a podcast. And I would just encourage you to go to some of the sessions that are being done here and some of the booth sessions. I know that David Wallace is here from at the Apple booth doing lots of stuff. And while I think the tools that Apple has are phenomenal, you don't need to feel like, oh gosh, I don't have that. I mean, can you get a $7 mic at Walmart? Yes. Do you have a microphone somewhere in your school? Probably. You don't need a camcorder or anything fancy. So, something else?
They have Blogger and
Right, that's a good question. There's a place called the Internet Archive that will host stuff for free, but I would recommend you go with your school district. You put it out there on the Internet Archive, it's out there. They'll host any kind of audio or video file for you free forever. It's kind of scary, maybe. But you can talk with folks at your school district and get some space to put that up. So, great examples of podcasts that you can check out in the iTunes Music Store, which is one place where you can access these. You can subscribe to a lot of these. And here's a comment that came back from another teacher blogger. This was from Mike Hetherington, who runs the blog Room 613 Student Blogs. Recently, I was looking for this presentation for examples of classrooms who are blogging. And I found Room 613. And I left, you know, about 3 or 4 comments for the students, always sandwiching it with good positives, you know, giving them some suggestions, affirming them. And here's what Mike wrote to me via my blog. Wesley, thank you for leaving comments on 2 of my student blogs last week. On Monday, one of them came bounding into the classroom, excited as can be, saying, "Guess what, Mr. H? I got a comment from Texas. Just wanted you to know your very well-written, positive comment left a very positive impression on a young learner. We should all take time to do the same." We could do that in professional development, you know? You have to do professional development. I really think teacher educators need to be doing this to see how this kind of thing is effectively being used. Your assignment, if you choose to accept it, I don't have the music to go with that. I could, but I don't have it to play right now, is to comment constructively on some student blogs, because that's the best way to see how this is being used. And I will include this link in the podcast show notes. You can really just remember speedofcreativity.org. You'll be able to get to all this. But this is a social bookmarking site about classroom blogs, and I think I have a collection of maybe between 15 and 20 right now. People all over the country, and some of them in other countries, who are using blogs to effectively engage students in the whole process of education. Darren Kropotwa is somebody that Miguel and I actually did a Skype cast with. He's a Canadian in Winnipeg. He's a secondary teacher, teaches pre-calculus and calculus, and his students are all blogging about calculus. We have needed a revolution in education for a long time, way before the digital natives ever showed up. So this really isn't something new. But I contend that our walk needs to match our talk and our needs. And so my challenge to you today, and the last things I'm going to share with you, are some specific places where your kids can go to get engaged in a global dialogue that's happening now. I mean, do you realize we live in a fundamentally different era of human history than ever before? Because anyone with access to the web can share their voice with a global audience. I challenge you to engage in messy assessment. When I was in kindergarten, I had remedial work on finger painting because I did not want to finger paint. And I remember this, right? Because I had to go home and my assignment was to make meatloaf with my mom so that I would get used to getting my fingers messy, and then when I was at school, I could successfully finger paint. Didn't like to do that. I don't know what that says about my personality, but it's a lot harder to engage in messy assessment when we're doing things that aren't bubbling. But let's face it, does anyone know someone who bubbles professionally out in the workforce? No. Nobody bubbles professionally. People are engaged in much more sophisticated things than bubbling, and so our assessment needs to match the real world. Podcasting is digital storytelling. I've had the pleasure of writing for the Tech Edge for a number of years. My last article for the Tech Edge is on this topic, and there's 10 reasons why you can jump into podcasting, because it's free, basically, you know, computer and microphone. The tools are there, the ability to leverage student motivation and excitement to learn is there, and it can be digital storytelling. I lost my grandmother about, I guess, maybe 3 years ago, and for those of us that have lost a family member, you know, once that person is gone, their voice is gone. It never comes back. And so there's a great opportunity for kids to get involved in oral history and in activities that really matter. Because what do they need to capture these voices? Well, a little digital voice recorder. You can get one at Radio Shack for like $50, $40. You can get them at Target. I think you can get them at Walmart. And they can go and record these voices, and they can become archivists for eternity. That's pretty cool. We need to align the reality that we have in instruction in our classrooms with student interests and with the demands of the literacy environment. Okay? And that was the best picture I could get for alignment, you know, this multi-story building. Okay, but the lines are all parallel there. They're lining up. They're not out of alignment. We need to get involved and get students engaged in the curriculum. And the last thing I'm going to share with you are three quick examples of websites you can go to. These are linked right off of my blog. And the first is the Global Voices Project. Did any of you hear about this news article this week? This is a little bit about Global Voices. Do you know about Iran and the Holocaust and what's happening with their inviting people to make cartoons about the Holocaust and trying to discredit the historians who know the Holocaust existed, the people who lived through the Holocaust? We cannot just go to Ted Turner, CNN, to get this news. Because you know what? I don't think these protesters that are being featured on CNN are representative of all the Iranian people. They are not representative of all the Muslims that live in this world. And so Global Voices, which is a project out of Harvard, lets these young people blog and talk. And here is what a Jordanian blogger named Lena said about this situation. This week, she said, maybe the solution is not a short-term action that we can take in direct response to this, but a conscientious effort to build our societies, to work for more awareness, more openness, more cultural and political development, to have a generation of young people who are not just either apathetic or reactive. I know that freedom of expression is not exactly the favorite term in this part of the world these days, speaking of Jordan, so I don't think it would be a good idea for me to bring it up now, but can we at least not pretend that everything is perfectly okay in our countries and our societies and that we are above everyone else? Today, more than ever, we need change, and we need change that's from within. So, this is a 20-something-year-old college student who's in Jordan, and I think we need to balance what we see in the popular media about this with what other people are blogging about. Second example, Committee on Conscience. I had a chance 2 weeks ago to participate in an interactive video conference that the U.S. Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. sponsored, and OU and UT Dallas were involved. Do you know about Darfur in the Sudan? Does that ring a bell? You and your students need to know about Darfur. Why? Because we have a genocide going on right now in the Sudan. Over 2 million people are dead, 4 million displaced in a 20-year-old conflict, and the U.S. Holocaust Museum is getting involved. Nobel Peace Prize winner Elie Wiesel discussed in a podcast that I listened to recently why we need to be engaged in this. History is not, we don't study history just to know facts. We study history so we don't repeat the mistakes of the past, and so we make a better future. And so your kids need to be aware, and they can be engaged in these kinds of dialogues. Last one is called the Global Youth Fund, globalyouthfund.org. It says, 2 billion of our planet's students are children under the age of 18, representing one-third of the world's population, and we need to listen to their voices. And these organizations give us an opportunity to hear voices that we might not hear otherwise. So, let's wrap up. What are the keys? The keys are engagement, relationships, storytelling. With ePals, you can reach out and connect with another classroom across the nation or across the globe, and your kids can have an actual relationship with someone else that I bet they will probably remember, and that they will develop those very literacy skills that we're all so eager for them to develop. I am not asking you to change the entire world. I am just asking you to change the part of the world where you live and you work. Your children and mine want to be engaged in work that matters. We do, okay? We're human beings. And so, how do we do that? Do we need technology to be involved in work that matters? No. Do we need technology to be a good teacher? No. But I'll tell you, you can leverage those tools. Just talk to these folks at these TIP campuses about instant messaging and kids communicating. Kids want to communicate. And we can leverage those tools, blogging and podcasting being two examples, to really make that dream a reality. Thank you for your patience, and have a great rest of the conference.